Hey everyone, we have a great episode of Withy Windle coming up. But first, I have a question for you. Are you tired of sorting the bad from the good at your library or local bookstore? Do you love books that hold your attention long after you've turned the last page? Well, if you're looking for beautiful books that the whole family will love to read, you want to check out Waxwing Books, the boutique publishing house born out of Sarah McKenzie's Read Aloud revival. Waxwing has already released two books, with many more on the way. Their next book is called Because Barbara, Barbara Cooney Paints Her World, a stunning picture book biography about the life of the one and only Barbara Cooney. Barbara Cooney set her mind to a lot of things, none so dear as capturing the beauty of the world in her paintings. These paintings would form the settings for her award-winning picture books, including Chanticleer and the Fox, The Oxcart Man, Miss Rumphius, Rocks a Box, and others. Side note, The Oxcart Man is one of my favorite picture books ever written, one that we have loved in our house and that I loved growing up as well. And in Because Barbara, this brand new picture book, you'll follow the true story of Barbara from New York and Maine to the shores of Greece and the mountains of Appalachia as she creates some of the most magnificent books for children ever published. The first step in every book lover's journey is a good book, so don't wait a second longer to start your journey with these beautiful books. Head to your favorite bookstore to pre-order the book that a bookless starred review promises will intrigue many adult readers as well as children. And if you order before June 17th, you'll get a few fun purchase bonuses. Now, we are going to have this book available to you over at goldberrybooks.com. So if you are interested in purchasing Because Barbara, Barbara Cooney Paints Her World from Waxwing Books, head over to goldberrybooks.com and you can pre-order it right now. It comes out June 17th. And as this says here, we have some special bonuses for you that Waxwing is providing. So head over to goldberrybooks.com or wherever you like to grab books to get your copy of Because Barbara, Barbara Cooney Paints Her World. Okay, here is this week's episode. Hello, Graham.
Hello, David.
Got a joke for you.
Let's hear this joke.
All right. So, what do you call a red-haired ninja?
I don't know.
A ginger.
Good. Best. That's your best one of the season.
You know, what I've discovered is The quality of ninja jokes is not as up to par as the quality of, cowboy jokes, for example. But I did that one. This is not bad.
I like that one. I'm giving it a 6.
Oh, thanks. That's pretty good. That's about right.
Hey, let's stay with red here. Okay. Is red and smells like blue paint?
A red Skittle.
Red paint.
Oh, well. Three.
Yep.
Is that fair?
Yeah, let's give it a 2. let's go. Okay.
All right, you know what? Enough of the nonsense. Let's get on with the nonsense. Welcome back to Withy Windle, a whimsical interactive show for kids who love stories, words, and groan-worthy jokes, featuring your favorite authors and illustrators. It's part bookish club, part game show. It's an adventure through the wild world of wordplay. I'm David Kern.
And I'm Graham Pittman.
And this is the fourth episode of the seventh season. That means it is the 7.4th. It's actually one where the th works.
The th works?
The
works?
Yeah. 7.4th.
That means we're almost halfway through season 7. Which, that can't be right. Is that right?
Seems wrong. We're almost halfway.
It seems so...
It's halfway is like halfway through the next episode. In the intermission of the next episode, we'll be halfway.
I can't do podcast math, so let's
just to be clear, that's just regular math.
Nope. But it's podcast math, and I can't do it. So okay. Let's move on.
All right. Well, we have a great show for you. We have, as a very special guest this week, Anna Rose Johnson. We'll tell you all about her in a little bit. We, at the end of the episode, as always, have riddle time. And we're going to talk about our ongoing story about Spence Barringer and Leonard and Marcelo Lentz and their theater troupe and what is going on there. And then we'll get to that. We're going to have snack time in just a second. It's a snack time we've discussed for a while.
Oh, dear.
And we're going to probably get sick. But first, Graham, we had this little thing where we wanted to name the bookstore Word of the Week printer.
The bookstore printer.
The bookstore troll was already named Gargle Hauser, but here we have our 3D printer who doesn't have a name. We just call him the word of the week printer, and that kind of doesn't roll off the old tongue, so to speak.
Right.
So we asked people to send in some possible options. Did anybody do that task?
They did. Yes, we got we've got dozens of potentials.
Okay.
We still need more though.
Okay.
So I'm going to tell you a couple of the ones that have been sent in.
Okay.
Maybe a few.
Okay.
A couple or a few.
A couple. What is the difference between a couple and a few in your mind?
I think in my mind and in objective fact, a couple is two.
Okay.
And a few is three or more. Okay. I don't know, or more, because that could be 100, and 100 doesn't seem like a few. Okay. Three to four. Okay, yeah, I don't know. But that sounds right to me, so you're right. So we have a few that I'm going to tell to you, David, and I want your opinion on these.
Okay, fire away.
But these, we are not deciding today, because we still want a couple or a few more people to write in and tell us what they think the printer should be called.
Right.
And they can do that at podcasts@goldberrybooks.com or go to withywindle.substack.com and just leave a comment on any post there and we will see it eventually.
They'll be added to the list.
All right. You ready for a couple?
I'm ready. Fire away.
Or a few?
No, I want a couple.
Okay. Here is...
What is 12? A dozen. How about a dozen? How about half a dozen? How about a fortnight? Can you do a fortnight of options?
I don't think you're ready. Are you ready?
I'm ready. Okay.
Okay, now you're ready. Okay. This is from Sarah.
Okay.
She said, if we want to give the printer a feminine name, Inkrid.
Inkrid?
Inkrid.
Say no more. That's it.
If we want to give him a masculine name, Humperdink.
Say no more. That's it. Those are amazing.
I thought you might like those.
What if the name was Inkrid Humperdink?
Savannah. Well, wow. Good golly. That doesn't roll off the tongue.
No wonder I had to go to California either to get some work done.
Savannah suggests a couple. Mr. Printer.
Okay. Nice.
Clean, formal.
Exactly. Mr. It's great. It's right. It's like Mr. Peanut.
I like it because I can picture him with now like a monocle and a top hat.
Right. Right.
She also suggests Loki.
Ah.
Because he's so mischievous.
Okay. Nice.
Here's one from Elijah. Okay. We'll end with this one.
So it really is a few.
Withyprintle.
Withyprintle. Okay. Nice. That gives us some good options.
There's some good options. And if anybody has feedback on those specific ones, they can also include that in their email. But eventually we'll put this up for a vote. We'll gather maybe five or six that we've selected and put it up for a vote. So yeah, this is fun. This is really good.
I like it. We should do this kind of thing more often. What if we were to, I don't know, give the kids the option to give a new name to you?
To me?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not 100% against it.
You know how sometimes you go to Starbucks and you say, my name is Graham.
My name's
and
Chris.
And then next thing you know, it doesn't look like it's not spelled properly.
Right.
If you just had a more simple name, like Humperdink, then they would be able to...
Yeah, I am actually nervous all the time at Starbucks because people hear my name as different things. So I usually just say Gargelhauser to keep it simple.
Makes sense. Makes sense. Yeah.
And people seem to appreciate that.
Yeah, yeah. I wonder... I would love. You should actually do that sometime and see what the person writes on the cup.
My social anxiety will not allow this.
Okay, somebody needs to go into a Starbucks for us and report back on what happens when you ask them to write Gargelhauser on your hot chocolate or your coffee.
Say, well, they say, what's your name? Give me a name. Name. Sometimes they just say name.
Name.
And you're like, Gargelhauser. Yes, report to us, but also take a photo of that cup.
Yeah.
I want to see that.
You may need to order the large one so they have more space to write on it. What's the large one at Starbucks again?
A venti.
A venti, yeah. Yeah.
A venti.
Or go to any coffee shop where they write your name on your drinks if you don't want to go to Starbucks. Okay, Graham, we have a busy show, so let's get right into snack time. What do you say?
Let's go.
Okay, so we need to apologize in advance for how unhealthy this snack time is. Not that we're known for having healthy snack times, but we're going to have a couple later on this season that are more healthy. Mm-hmm. We have some things lined up. But this is one we've talked about doing for a while.
Could we also alleviate some concern?
Yeah.
I think there might be a little bit of a misconception that we eat like we do on With the Window all the time.
That's right. Yeah, that is not true.
It is not true. We have a pretty balanced diet. However, it leans a little bit into like more snackish.
Yeah.
More snackish than
but
maybe.
But listen, I was at my mom's house last night mm-hmm. and she offered me a Twizzler and I said no. So we don't only eat this kind of stuff. We right. sometimes say no.
And so. And you're going to hear a variety, you're going to hear us eat about eight different things tonight. And we're going to have a bite of each.
Right. We don't eat the whole thing. We don't eat the whole bag of M&Ms or the whole thing of
this
Oreos.
This is like a PSA.
Right.
I think this
right.
is turning into like, because we also advise you yeah. not to eat
right.
Too much junk food.
If you as your family are doing this on a road trip, or most of these things we think of as like things you'd eat on a road trip when you're just, you know, you're trying to make the time go by, or like comfort foods, share them amongst one another. You don't, if you're going to do a taste test like this, share them. Take one bite and share the rest of it.
Oh, and we do also, coming up in this season, have a couple like healthy snack times
right.
coming up.
Right.
And we just
genuinely
did,
healthy.
And we just did a tortilla one. That one wasn't too bad. But yeah, I'm looking at the spread we have here. I'm a little nervous.
Okay, so this makes me think of when we lived together in college. I'm just going to say that.
Okay.
Because this is the official Withy Windle Little Debbie snack taste test.
Taste test.
We have... We didn't get all the Little Debbies, but we got the sort of most, the classic ones. There's a few, obviously, we didn't get, because you can't eat them all. We have the Nutty Buddy, the Fudge Rounds, the Honey Buns, the Oatmeal Cream Pies, the Star Crunch, the Swiss Rolls, and the Zebra Cakes. Mm. So, did you eat these when you were a kid?
Of course. Yeah, I've had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. I've had 7 of 7.
Okay.
Yeah.
And when was the last time you ate any of these? This morning?
The last time, maybe a couple months ago, maybe I had like a Swiss cake roll or something.
Yeah.
I don't buy these very often.
Yeah, no. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. We don't buy them at our house either. I mean, maybe like for a Super Bowl party or...
Oh, yes.
You know, you're on a movie night with when all the kids get together or something.
Party time.
But you know, we don't buy 7 of them. We might buy one box. Okay, what do you want to start with?
I kind of want to... crack into that zebra cake.
All right, let's do that. Now, Graham, why do you think that these are called zebra cakes?
I would assume because it is they are white and they have chocolatey black lines across them, which resemble a zebra.
Okay, so the great thing about these is you can pull it out of the box and there's two in there. So I'm going to take one over here, and then I'm going to pass it over to you. I'm going to toss it without trying to crush it. Okay, so now I know I get comments from my friends whose kids listen to this mm-hmm. about how gross it is when we eat into the microphones. And let me just say, you know, if that bothers you, skip ahead. here we go. Okay, zebra cakes. I just got like a vanilla cake with white icing and then a layer of cream in the middle.
I think it's fine. It's not my favorite.
It's a little dry. The cake part is a little dry. And there's not enough cream in my opinion. Yeah. I can see why they make them. But it wouldn't be one that I would go back to very often.
But currently, it's in first place.
That's right.
For both of us. Let's do the fudge round.
Fudge round, all
so
right.
So this is like two chocolate cookies with some sort of chocolate cream inside.
Okay. Do you just bite into one of these or do you tear it in half? It's got a little drizzle on top. Like, do you like to pull it apart?
I bend them in half, yeah.
Okay, all right. Fudgy. Again, I feel like they're cutting corners on the filling. Need double stuff.
Like, you need double stuff. Yeah, tell me, what do you think?
It's pretty good. It's kind of going brownie-ish, you know, that fudgy. Mm-hmm. I think it's better than this one, than the zebra cake.
Zebra cake, yeah.
But it's not like, it's kind of one note to me.
I agree.
It needs more texture or something.
I think it's better, but not by much.
Okay, I agree.
What are you picking next?
Let's do honey buns next.
Honey bun.
We should have opened these boxes ahead of time because they're kind of tricky. Now. Okay. Here you go. Tossing one over to you. So these look like honey buns. You know, they look like they're iced. They look like a cinnamon roll. They're all individual. Everything's individually plastic wrapped, so it's got a good glaze on it. That's pretty good. I think it's way better than the other two.
It is. These are never my favorite because it's like a it's like a glazed donut, but it's shaped like a cinnamon roll.
Yeah.
And I always want there to be cinnamon.
Yeah, there's not. Yeah,
so I always find them a little bit bland.
So you can get glazed donut sticks from Little Debbie, but I didn't think we needed to do glazed donut sticks and honey buns.
Mm-hmm.
So you have that above the other two?
Yeah.
Okay.
We're not starting off super strong.
No, we're not overly enthusiastic about these, are we?
That might change with these next. These next four are they're the heavy hitters in my mind.
Yeah, they are. So we saved the best for last.
I didn't necessarily mean to do that.
So this is Star Crunch that we're doing fourth.
This is cookies with caramel and crisp rice.
See, this has the thing that I was talking about a minute ago. Texture.
Mm.
We're chewing. It's chewy. It's crispy.
Whoa. That's a mouthful.
What do you think?
I love these. So
it's definitely better than the other four, three.
This is high for me. Right now it's the number one.
This is the first one that I feel like I could eat two of these in a sitting with, like, while watching a game or a movie.
Yeah.
And it would become a problem.
I think the caramel and, like, the Rice Krispie.
Yeah.
I think, yeah, it elevates it.
I do wish that the caramel was the kind where you would, like, make it a Twix, whereas you eat it, it stretches out.
Oh, they don't put that much in.
Yeah,
they don't do that.
Okay. So, right now, our ranking is, I think, the same. Star Crunch, Honey Buns, Fudge Rounds, Zebra Cakes. Are you in agreement with that?
Yes.
Okay. We got three left. Nutty Buddies, Oatmeal Cream Pies, and Swiss Rolls. What do you want to do next?
Nutty Buddy.
Okay. Now, Nutty Buddies, this reminds me of being 18, living together in Iowa, and sitting up in the attic, playing a video game, watching a movie.
NHL 2003.
Yeah. Comes in that two-pack. We'd open that up. We'd toss one back and forth. And then we thought we were only going to eat one each. And then we'd open another one. This is a different time. Our metabolisms worked a little differently. We didn't get heartburn the same way we do now. Our pets' heads weren't... Oh, the kids don't know that joke. All right, here, I'll pass it over to you. It's the wafers wrapped in chocolate, layered on top of one another. They almost melt in your mouth.
Yep.
In my opinion, there's a peanut butter in there too. In my opinion, the Nutty Bar, is one of the reasons why science was discovered. We invented the telephone, antibiotics, the automobile, and the Nutty Buddy. In no particular order.
I just thought of you, and now you put it in, like, third place. So that's your number one, huh?
So far. What about you?
Yeah. Yeah.
You like it better than Star Crunch?
I do. I like them. I thought I liked them about the same, but when I eat them back to back, it's kind of no contest. Like
the nutty bars, yeah.
It's so good.
It gets on your fingers a little bit. It's not heavy. A lot of these kind of foods just have that heavy.
Yeah. All right. So we still heaviness. We still have two left, and I think it's actually going to be kind of difficult because there's a few of these I really like to know which one is actually at the top. But when I can stare at them all afterwards and then I realize which one I want to eat, I think it'll become clear.
Okay. All right.
That will be the number one.
So we have two left. This penultimate one, second to the last, is oatmeal cream pie. Did you know, Graham, that Alabama football coach Nick Saban, for breakfast every day, the most successful college football coach of all time, arguably. Dare I say, one of the most successful Americans living right now. Every day for breakfast, a cup of black coffee and two oatmeal cream pies. Every day.
What?
And he is still alive.
That's incredible.
Okay, are you ready?
I don't have any coffee.
Yeah.
Which actually, that sounds delightful.
Yeah. A little late for that.
I really like these.
Where do you put them in the order?
I'm going to tie them with a Star Crunch right now.
So here's the thing about this one. This is the only one of these things. Well, Honey Bun, I guess this is true of also, where you can go to certain bakeries and things like that and get incredible homemade oatmeal cream pies. The coffee shop next to our bookstore, Press and Porter.
Yep.
They have a local baker that makes these giant, delicious oatmeal cream pies, and they've got a nice, thick layer of cream. And that makes me, I like this, but the fact that I can get
better
oatmeal cream pie somewhere else makes me want to put up third. That's, you know, before the Honey Bun, but after the Star Crunch. Also, is there really oatmeal in these cookies?
No, but there's the taste of it.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah. But what you're saying right there makes me think that maybe we should go into business making our own homemade version of Star Crunch that we then sell to different coffee shops and restaurants.
It sounds like a great idea. Let's stop this podcast and open up.
Have people done that yet?
Star Crunch Bakery. So you have it tied for second.
I'll move it. Let's just do our combined rankings. I'll move it down. I think that's fair.
Okay, so that means with one left to go, Nutty Buddies first, then Star Crunch, then Oatmeal Cream Pie, then Honey Bun. And then it seems like there's a bit of a distance to Fudge Round and Zebra Cake.
Those last ones I don't really care about.
Yeah, I'm not that. I mean, like if I gave them to my kid, they'd probably be gone in 10 seconds.
Although, you know, if somebody threw a Zebra Cake at me, or if it's Christmas time and they're shaped like a Christmas tree, you know, they're kind of the same, I'd be happy.
The more I sit here and think about it, the more I actually want to put the Zebra Cake above the Fudge Round for some reason.
Let's do it. That's fine. These Zebra Cakes seem pretty dry. I've had them where they're better.
Yeah. And that's, you know, we're talking about a box snack. All right, Graham. Last is, in some ways, the thing that you associate most with Little Debbie.
Continental. That's what it is. It comes all the way from the Alps.
It's the Swiss roll. Okay, here, I'm just going to open this. Remember, it comes again. It comes in pairs. So I'm going to take one and then pass you over.
Okay, so from what, I mean, this is anecdotal.
Yep.
This is just from hearing from friends and people throughout, you know, my life, my 30-odd years. I think this one is like the one that people consider the best.
Ready? Here we go. So that swirl layer of chocolate, or something that approximates chocolate, with something that approximates cream in the middle.
And a healthy portion of both. And
it's got
full of flavor.
Exactly. It's got that that sort of hard shell on the outside. It's not really hard. And then nice and soft, cakey on the inside.
It's very good.
Is it your number one?
It's very good. Well, let me see. Which one do I want to eat the rest of?
Did you know you can get these with strawberry filling?
I've had that. I didn't love that. I think it's my number two.
My favorite thing about this is that it, you know how like the all the other ones will have like a description. So, you know, Nutty Bar wafers with peanut butter. There's no description anywhere on this one. It just
speaks for itself.
It's a cake roll. It's a Swiss roll. I mean, I don't know what you need to, what else you need to know about it.
It's like the box is saying, you know.
Okay, so you have Nutty Buddy first?
I do, and I almost feel bad because in our M&M one, the peanut butter and the peanut won out. But in the Oreo one, the peanut butter did not.
That's true.
Not even close. So maybe it's fine. I mean,
I'm fine either way on this.
What do you?
I could go either way.
Where are you leaning?
I think that the peanut butter one tends to make my mouth a little drier, and so I tend to.
That's what you should have it with black coffee.
Exactly. I think I would crave the Swiss roll a little more. Like I would want. That's the one I'd be more likely to grab at the store or at the gas station on a road trip. But I think the Nutty Buddy is like objectively better. I think that might be what I would say.
I like the texture of the. I think the Nutty
Buddy. It's got the crunch.
The
wafers.
And these two both have like a chocolate shell, yeah. Kind of that the other ones don't.
Okay, so then how about we do this? How about number one, Nutty Buddy, number two Swiss roll, number three Star Crunch, number four oatmeal cream pie, number five honey bun, number six zebra cake, number seven fudge round.
We did it.
Now we didn't do this like. Cosmic Brownie and some things like that we didn't do, but
that's Little Debbie.
Yeah, it was in the same section anyway.
Okay, then it is. People love those.
Yeah,
I do not like those.
Yeah, it's
those
not...
would be low for me because it's like I just don't think of it as a good brownie. Maybe I should think of it as something else. But like,
yeah,
like our wives make way better brownies.
Right. Yeah, and that's why I kind of was like, "Hey, man, I make better brownies."
No, sure, that's true. I do not.
The fudge round and I chose the fudge rounds instead of the cosmic brownie because cosmic brownie, it's kind of like that Oreo last week where it was supposedly had the little candies in it that was supposed to approximate gummy worms and we didn't like it.
No.
It's the same concept to me.
With the sprinkle on
top. Yeah. So,
you know what I think about the cosmic brownie?
What?
They should shoot it into space. That's what I think.
Oh, I like it. You know what? Let's take a quick break. And while we're gone, we can come up with a plan to do just that. Maybe we can get Gargohauser and the bookstore printer, the Word of the Week printer involved. And then when we come back, we'll talk more about Spence Barringer and the mysteries surrounding him and what's going on. All right, Graham, it is story time. And it is time to figure out what's next in our storytelling. I don't want to say what's next in our story, but what's next in our storytelling. What do we need to come up with next, and where do we take our plotting next in our story of Spence Barringer, Leonard, his understudy, Marcelo Lentz, the director, and his unusually named Bangle Boys, Klutz, Coral, and Q. We've thought about this, I think, a little bit each on our own, but where do we need to go next? What's the next step?
I think we're both in agreement that we may need to revise some of the things we talked about. They've just, as we've been thinking about it, it's just like naturally some of the things will have to change.
Yeah.
And I think we've come up with
some things come to the fore and some things fade away in terms of our interests even.
Yeah. So last time we did it, we talked about, we kind of defined those Bangle brothers as characters. And that they're going to be antagonists of a sort.
Yeah, yeah.
Either going after the same thing. No, yeah, going after the same thing as Spence.
So I have an idea for that.
Wait, did you set that timer?
Not yet. I will in a second.
Mm-hmm.
You want me to set it right now?
We're right in the middle of it.
I was just waiting for us to officially get into the storytelling part of it. All right, I'll set the timer. We spend 10 minutes... talking about the story.
Okay.
So here's an idea that I have for you.
Yes.
What if Marcelo Lentz has an idea of what Spence is after? And so then he sends the Bangle brothers, who are part of the troupe, after him. And maybe they're not actually big bad guys. They're just the guys that Marcelo Lentz is using to go find Spence.
Okay.
So Marcello and Spence have, there's some kind of a connection. They have some kind of similar sense. So really it's Marcello that's more of our antagonist than the Bangle brothers. The Bangle brothers are like, they could even offer some comedy in our story. In addition to their names being Klutz, Coral, and Q Bangle.
Yeah. I think that's a good idea. I think like having them not be mercenaries or agents, but just being members of the troop that...
One guy's tall, one guy's strong or something.
Yeah, that naturally become kind of the antagonist or that are working to hinder our protagonist.
Yeah.
Makes a lot of sense. And I like that. And then one of the other things I was thinking of is like this, so far this is a very masculine cast.
Yeah, we need some ladies.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I think we need to define a couple female characters.
Okay.
Today.
Okay.
And then we need to just flesh out more of this story.
I think we need to figure out too a little bit about like what Spence is after. See if we can get closer to that.
So last time we talked about like him going after an object. Mm-hmm. And we used a sock as an example, and maybe something magical. He's going after something magical. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about other objects as well. Like, what would somebody go after?
So you could go after something. You could be after power. So you could go after something that makes you powerful. It could be maybe you go after treasure, wealth.
Yep.
So maybe there's magic, something sentimental. You know,
sure.
I don't know why Marcello is after something that is sentimental to Spence, but maybe there's something there.
Well, he could just be trying to stop. He doesn't want Spence to leave the troop, too.
Hmm.
So maybe that's his motivation, too, is like he just wants his business to run well.
What if instead of like a treasure or an item, or maybe in addition to that, Spence had... There is something from his past
mm-hmm.
that he's trying to resolve, a mystery that he's trying to solve. So, for example, what if one of his parents, like say you wanted to do more, what if maybe his mother, when he was young, was part of the troop and say she disappears and goes out one day, they're in a town acting, she goes to the market one day and she never comes back. And then Marcello takes young Spence, maybe he's like 3 years old. So he, or 5 years old.
He's been like part of the...
And he's been part of the troop. He's been helping out and now he's an actor. And along the way, as they go to all these different villages, he's trying to figure out
what
happened to his mom.
This is great.
And for some reason, Marcello doesn't want him to maybe, or maybe there's some connection that has, some mystery that his mom is connected to that Marcello doesn't want to have, or he needs the Bangle brothers to follow him to get to the thing and then take it from him. Something like that.
Mm.
So we got to figure out then, the mystery then would be what happened to his mom and how does he find her?
Yeah.
Could do something like that.
Yeah. I like that a lot because then, yeah, maybe Marcello has a secret.
Oh, yeah.
Or
that he doesn't want found out?
Or maybe he just knows the information and is scared to tell Spence or maybe he was involved in something or... Yeah, so his motivation, like, that's interesting because to figure out what his motivation is, because it could go in a number of different directions. It could be something nefarious. It could be something as simple as, like, trying to keep the troop together. It could be, like, he knows that if Spence finds out a certain thing, he's going to leave. But then, okay, then we have to revise those. Okay, so the Bangle brothers are not – they didn't join the troop – to go after Spence.
No, they're
they've
just
been
part
in
of the
troop.
And Marcello needs somebody to go find Spence and help.
And then Spence didn't join the troop to go after the thing. He's been in the troop since he was as long as he can remember.
And as he goes around town, all these different villages across England where they've been acting, he's kind of had his ear to the ground trying to discover
or
clues.
At least in the last couple years maybe.
Yeah,
like
there
as
you go.
He's been.
So maybe they're in a village now, and there's something or someone in the village that gives him a clue that causes him to leave.
That recognizes him, or like, yeah, well, okay,
yeah. Well, that could be another girl. Like that could be another girl character.
Okay. All right. First, before we go any farther,
okay,
let's name his mom.
Okay,
and let's name this character then.
Okay,
and is this character? I mean, did we define Spence's age? What do you think? 13.
Maybe make him a little older.
13 and a half. 13 and a half. Okay.
So he's old enough to be independent.
15.
Like go 15. On an adventure. Okay. Okay, so should I do my random thing here with the names that I collected from around town?
Okay, who are we going for first?
Let's do the mother first.
Okay.
So what if the mother's name is... Okay, pick a number between 1 and 4.
1.
Matilda.
Okay.
So the mother's name is Matilda.
That's great.
Matilda was an actress once upon a time, perhaps, and she disappeared from the troupe, leaving her young son behind with the troupe, who keeps him around and protects him, seemingly.
Yes.
Well, Spence the whole time has wanted to know what Matilda was, why she disappeared, and where mm-hmm. Where is she now? They don't know, no sign of her. It's not like she could just pull on her cell phone in the 1300s and shoot a text over to Marcello that says, "Be back in 2 hours, watch my kid."
Mm-hmm.
Okay, then we need the girl. Okay, pick a number between 1 and 3.
2.
Ariana.
Okay.
So who is this? Is she? She lives in the village. Is that what you're saying? Or what I was?
I would. Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, They're all transient. All the other characters. We have to have some stationary.
So she lives in this village where they've been performing.
Yeah, and maybe she saw him on stage, and afterwards came. No, he. No.
Well,
no,
they that might, make they sense. Might do multiple shows in a you know in okay. one place though.
So that and work. That's why he missed the next one.
And then he makes the next one. Then Leonard has to go up. And everyone was so thought they were going to see Spence Barringer. And then it turned out it was Leonard. And he didn't live up to it. So then they started tomatoing him.
He got tomatoed. Okay.
Because everyone in the village thought they were going to get the great Spence Barringer after his performance the first day. But Ariana, for some reason, she knows something about the mom, maybe.
Yep.
And she pulls him away.
And then eventually, Ariana, Spence, and Leonard all are... probably leaving this troop to go, at least temporarily, to go figure something out. And then we have Spence, Klutz, Coral, and Q coming after them.
Yeah.
Or maybe...
on Marcello's behalf.
Yeah.
So what if Leonard... So the beginning of the story, he's been on stage, he's gotten tomatoed. Like, at least the part that we were talking through that first episode. What if, because he's still there... Spence has told him, "Hey, I need to leave. I need to go, and don't tell him where I'm going." Or maybe he doesn't even tell Leonard. But then Leonard tells Marcello, "Spence is gone." Or maybe Spence tells Leonard, "You'll be fine. You can do it. You've been practicing."
Yeah, yeah.
And then Leonard tells Marcello, "I have to do it. Spence is gone." And that they do the show, but then they do one more show.
Bad.
But then Marcello knows we have to get Spence back, either to keep the plays together. To keep getting money from the village, or because he knows something about the mom. So then he sends the Bengal brothers off, and that's where we are when the story
starts.
So
maybe...
Or right around... That's the beginning of the story.
So maybe he knows... He's very suspicious that Spence would disappear in this particular town. Mm,
maybe he... Yeah, maybe Marcella knows more even than Spence does.
Right.
Until Ariana, our girl in the village... gives him some kind of a clue or whisks him away. Mm-hmm. What if she actually protects him? What if she's like in an inn or what? We got to figure what she does. Mm-hmm. And the Bengal brothers actually are getting close. And then she sends the Bengal brothers on a wild goose chase.
That's good. Yeah, I was thinking of this story going town to town. But as a short story, I don't think we can do that.
It's tricky because we only, you know, if we end up turning this into like, you know, you have one condensed story unless... We might want to talk a little bit about what we're going to do with this at some point. Maybe we should talk about that next week, though.
Okay.
But because we only have 35 seconds left on our clock.
Yeah, I think all of these questions and all of these motivations and like really hashing them out and like we think we have something and then we have to cross it out and change it because it's kind of a spider web of like how these people relate to each other and what their different motivations are.
Draw it all on a board.
I know this is taking a long time to figure out, but this is like... pretty foundational to where anything else goes.
Right.
And I don't think I'm too worried about like how far we get, let's just say in this whole season.
Yeah, we might not have the ending of the story. In fact, we probably won't have the ending, but that'll give kids, maybe kids could write their own endings or we'll turn it into something.
Yeah, later. I think we should finish it in some capacity.
Yeah.
But let's talk about that later.
Well, our clock just ran out.
Okay, so let's say next week we definitively decide what happened to Spence's mom.
Okay.
And maybe...
Even if he doesn't know?
Even if he doesn't know.
As the storytellers.
We need to know. Okay. And then we need to know the next actions. Like, are they staying in this village or are they going out? Mm-hmm. And then we should probably also talk about Leonard and Spence and Ariana and kind of like talk a little bit about their characters and how they're different from each other.
Yeah, okay. Great. And
good.
Before we go, should we decide what Ariana does in the village? She's probably a teenager too, right? So, you know, if she's going to go on the adventure, maybe she shouldn't be a 13-year-old blacksmith.
Right. I think she helps out at something. So okay. Maybe I like that inn. I think that's cool.
An inn? Okay. Mm-hmm. Kind of like the Prancing Pony.
Yeah.
Using the Prancing Pony as our inspiration. Okay, cool. I think we made some progress.
I do too, yeah.
The story's starting to be turned into something. I hope.
Just cleaning it up a little bit.
That's right.
As we go.
Okay, well, that brings us to the end of story time. Up next, we have our author interview with Anna Rose Johnson. And we will be... You know what? No, we won't. Why don't we just introduce her right now? Just go right into it.
Oh, God, if you say so.
Logan, if you want to drop a sound effect in here, I mean, feel free, but...
David's flying by the seat of his pants here.
Well, you know, it's all the Star Crunch. Why is a Star Crunch called a Star Crunch?
It's a mystery of the universe. It doesn't look like a star to me.
Are those craters? But do stars have craters?
Stars don't have craters.
What if it was called Moon Crunch? Would you eat it?
I mean, I eat it even though it's called Star Crunch.
That's true.
So yes, I would eat it if it was called Moon Crunch. Moon Crunch sounds better to me.
Than Star Crunch?
We should start a petition.
When we do our own version of them that we sell to coffee shops, we'll call them Moon Crunch. And then that would mean Moon Crisp.
Moon Crisp. You know, that's pretty good.
We probably should take a break and come back in a second because we got to talk about some business ideas now.
Oh, yes. Okay.
All right, Graham, we are back and it is time to introduce Anna Rose Johnson, our very special guest for this episode. Anna Rose is a novelist whose first novel was called The Star That Always Stays. That came out in July of 2022. And her new book is called The Luminous Life of Lucy Landry. She says that her novels are inspired by the beautiful, whimsical, and family-oriented fiction of authors like Lucy Maud Montgomery, Noel Stretfield, Maud Hart Lovelace, Beverly Cleary, and Elizabeth Enright. Now, Graham, one thing we didn't talk about on the show is this little tidbit. She is also a gymnastics blogger and journalist, and she has conducted 450-plus interviews with athletes from all over the globe, including Olympic and world champions.
My goodness.
We didn't talk about that, but that's because we were talking about her books and stuff, but that's a pretty interesting fact. I bet she's the first person to come on Withy Windle, and perhaps maybe the only person who will ever come on Withy Windle, who has interviewed 400-plus athletes, including Olympian and world champions.
Yeah, so I know Daniel Nairi's interviewed 399
right.
gymnasts.
Right.
But 400
450 plus, yeah. And counting, I assume. Now, she's also a member of the Sault Ste. Marie tribe of Chippewa Indians, which is an interesting fact for me because my mom was born in Sault Ste. Marie. So I just wanted to drop that in there and give a shout out to my mom who listens to this podcast occasionally too. So, hi, Mom. Okay, now, enough of my mom, though. Let's kick it over to Anna Rose Johnson and say hello to her. So here she is. All right, we are here with our very special guest this week. It's Anna Rose Johnson. Anna, thank you so much for joining Withy Windle.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I'm very excited to be here.
So, you mentioned that you've listened to the show before. Before we started recording, you told us that. And so you know what's about to happen. You know what question's about to be asked. It's the first question we ask every guest who comes in with you, Wendell, since the very first episode. It may or may not be the most important question you ever get asked in an interview. Anna Rose, Cheetos or Doritos?
Well, I would have to say Doritos.
They
are my favorite.
Okay, so is this something you've like... thought about a lot, or when you hear the question, is it just like immediately? Do you just not a Cheetos person at all?
No, I do. I do like Cheetos a lot.
Okay.
But I would say that Doritos are my top favorite.
Okay, so are you snacking on Doritos or Cheetos while writing?
Well, I have. Yeah, most of the time I don't snack while I write, but I am a big Doritos fan.
Is it like a punishment for yourself? Like to not eat while writing?
No, it's just how I do it.
Okay. Well, I mean, I don't know if I could get through a writing session without snacks. Graham, could you get through anything without snacks?
Through anything? No, nothing. But I'm especially happy with this answer because I feel like we've gotten like a string of Cheeto answers in a row. And I like that you're mixing it up for us. This is good.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so related to food then, are you a coffee or a tea drinker?
Actually, not either.
Oh, just like water all the time?
Which I know is quite different for writers, because I feel like every other writer, either loves coffee or tea. But yeah, I'm fond of like apple juice and water, and that's pretty much what I do.
Okay, so does that mean then that you like do you have a go to drink in the morning? Do you just get up and drink water? You don't need caffeine? Is that what we're hearing?
Yeah, I don't need caffeine.
Wow, I don't know what that's like.
Yeah, we our energy is not natural. We need supplemental energy. So I love apple juice. That's like my favorite juice. And do you like it like really cold, like medium cold, room temperature? What is your go-to there?
Yeah, I like it always. I do like room temperature, just because there's more flavor then.
Oh yeah, yeah. Then you're not just tasting coldness.
Yes, exactly.
Do you have opinions about apple cider?
Oh, great question.
Yeah, mostly just apple juice. That's what I like.
So, okay, one more food question, and then Graham's gonna, he's got a question for you to kind of get us going. So, do you eat cookies or cake? Like, which would you prefer between the two of those?
Cake. Yeah, definitely. I do like cookies.
Do you have a favorite cake, though?
I would probably say chocolate. I think I like chocolate cake best.
All right, like just like a, do you like a German chocolate cake? Do you have any special, like special things you'd want involved in that, like nuts or anything?
Yeah, probably just plain, I think. Just your average chocolate cake with chocolate frosting. I find that just very delicious.
Hey, I mean, it's a classic for a reason, right?
Yes.
We have to stop recording these at like mid-afternoon, because it's like lunch was a long time ago. Dinner's not for a while. And like, yeah, I'm starting to get very hungry. Yeah. But let's move on.
But on the other hand, you now have enough time to bake a cake before you go to bed tonight.
That's true.
I have the time, yes, the skill, no. So let's move off of food. Let's dive into some book questions. So Anna Rose, as you'll see from questions coming up, quite a few of our listeners know who you are and what you do. But for those who might be new to them, we wanted to kind of give you that chance to talk about your books and how you kind of got started.
Yes. I have published two books so far, and they're both middle grade historical novels set in 1910s Michigan. And my first book was The Star That Always Stays, which is inspired by the life of my great-grandmother, Norvia. And my second book, which just released a couple of weeks ago, is The Luminous Life of Lucy Landry. And it's about a young girl who goes to live with a family of lighthouse keepers. And there's also a little bit of a mystery to solve. So yeah, they both were just such a joy to write. And I'm very excited to be able to share them with readers. They have like some, I would say both books have kind of an Anne of Green Gables vibe. So yeah, I'm just... It's so fun to, finally be able to share Lucy with readers as well.
So let's talk about this Anne of Green Gables thing, because you referenced it right off the bat. Is that a book that is one of your like beloved books, like that's a huge inspiration for you and you've returned to over and over again?
Yes. Yes, it definitely is. Yes, I have always loved Anne of Green Gables and the whole Anne series. I'm just a big fan. And so, yeah, in both of these books, I really have tried to kind of capture some of the feel of that book and other similar classic girls' books. I think it's just really cool to be able to, get a little bit of that feeling into books written
now.
Is that,
was that hard? Is that or even intimidating?
Yes, because I definitely want to, you know, make sure that it does have those qualities, you know, when you are using Anne as kind of a comp title. In the marketing, you want to, yeah, make sure that it lives up to those expectations. And I certainly hope that they do.
So is like, when you're doing that, are you talk about the vibe kind of being the same. I don't know if that's the word you used to use, but that's how I heard it.
Yes.
So, what does that look like? Are you reading Anne a bunch and then just trying to let the spirit of Anne of Green Gables filter into your stories? Are you looking to take specific things from Lucy Maud Montgomery's books and bring them into the books? How do you do that? How do you bring something that inspires you into your own work?
Mm-hmm. Yes. So for my first book, The Star That Always Stays, it was definitely, I was reading, a lot of Ella Montgomery books at the time when I was writing it, and also other classic books too. And I was just, I was letting the general, the feel of those books, the writing style, I would say in particular, just kind of that, the way that the sentences are structured, vocabulary, it's just a very different style than you see in modern books. And so, I really was reading those and just letting that style kind of seep into my writing. And then with my new book, Lucy Landry, that was more that was, I wanted some of the plot elements to be similar, like, you know, Lucy is an orphan, looking for a home. And so then it's more similar in the story, I would say, to Anne.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So yeah, just in different ways. I would say I've tried to bring the spirit in.
So you're saying Anne of Green Gables is like a lighthouse for you as a writer.
Yes, you can say that.
Go ahead.
All right. So this question is from Tiana, and she is wondering, how old were you when you started seriously pursuing publication?
I was pretty young when I started thinking about publication, because I was writing stories all throughout my childhood. And even I can remember even being like 7 years old and, you know, wanting to be published. But I would say that I didn't really seriously begin actively pursuing publication until I was done with high school. And it was after that. So I think it was maybe when I was 19 that I started more actively pursuing that, when I was, you know, trying to find an agent who would represent my work. And so, it was a, you know, somewhat, it felt like a long process, you know, looking back at, I think all came together really well. It's like, I was very proud of my writing, you know, as a kid. but I knew, you know, kind of deep down that I wasn't really, you know, publication ready. And so I felt that I should, you know, wait to try and get published. Then once I felt that I was ready, and that was when I was working on one draft of The Star That Always Stays, and the revision was going really well. And I'm like, you know, I think I'm ready to start that whole process. So yeah. And then I got an agent shortly after that. So yeah, it was a very cool process. Mm-hmm.
So we have a question here from Riley, which I think is a good one. And Riley asks, how do you write a book that involves a present storyline and a storyline from the past, as in the star that always stays, and then connect them to create a cohesive story? Also, what is your favorite kind of dog? Riley asks. So that's a two-part question, but let's start with that first one. So how do you take a present-day storyline and a storyline from the past and then make it cohesive? What's that like?
Mm-hmm. You definitely have to make sure that the pieces that are set in the past are relevant to what's going on in the present day story. And so for me, it was an opportunity to kind of illustrate thematically what was going on in my main character's life and, you know, contrasting how things had changed for her over the years. And then just, you know, my character comes to more of an understanding about, you know, things that, you know, were going on in her family. And then that's what the reader comes to realize too. And so that's a way to, just get a little bit extra plot going. And it was just a really interesting process to do. I enjoyed it a lot.
What about the dog question? Do you have a favorite dog?
Yes, I do. I would say that my favorite dog is a Whippet. And they're similar to Greyhounds, but smaller. And I had a Whippet named Gracie that I really loved. And she was just so cute. And so the dog in The Start Always Stays is kind of inspired by my dog.
Do you have a dog right now?
Yes, a corgi.
Oh, okay.
Corgis are adorable.
I feel like there's going to be a whole future series of books about a corgi somewhere along the way.
That would be really fun.
Graham, you got one?
Yeah. So this question is from Ellie, and she wants to know how much of your books is written from past experiences, like homeschooling, having a lot of siblings, sailing, family issues, and love of reading books.
Yes. I do draw on my own experiences when I write, and I didn't have personal experience with everything in these books, but I definitely try to bring authenticity to my characters and their adventures. Yeah. And yes, I was homeschooled growing up, so I enjoyed being able to write about a homeschooling family in Lucy Landry. And yes, I also have 4 siblings.
Where are you in the order?
I'm the youngest.
Okay. The youngest of 5.
Yep.
What was that like?
It's great.
Graham's also a youngest.
Yeah, I agree. Being the youngest is pretty good. It's pretty good. David, you wouldn't know, but it's got its perks.
No, I wouldn't. I'm the oldest of 5.
It has its perks.
Okay, so Graham, there's a bunch of questions in here that in some ways we could do as a rapid fire thing, because there's several more food questions that I'm noticing. We got questions about ice cream and cereal and all kinds of things like that. What should we just do a few of those real quick?
Go for it, yeah.
And then we got a quiz coming up here, of course, as usual. So Torn wants to know, what's your favorite ice cream flavor?
I really love Moose Tracks ice cream.
Oh, yeah.
I haven't even heard that one before.
Yeah, it's
a good choice.
Really good. I like both the vanilla and the chocolate with the chocolate chunks in it.
Okay, so Torrens is, you know, we're recording this towards the end of March, so it's still relatively winter time. Well, it's like actually winter time in some places. But Torrens says, what's your opinion of on ice cream in the winter?
I think ice cream is good anytime.
That's the correct answer. I feel like that's the official Withy Windle stance.
Yes.
All right. What is your favorite cereal? Molly asked that one.
I like Cheerios.
Okay. I don't know if we're getting unique answers in this episode from all of those. I like this.
Well, that's good.
Now, are you just regular Cheerios, or do you like Honey Nut, or do you like the ones with the crunchy oat things attached to them and all that?
I do like the honey one. But mostly I just eat the absolute plain standard Cheerios.
Okay, so how did your pizza? I'm curious.
Like what toppings do I like?
Yes. Yeah.
I like pepperoni and cheese, and I really love olives.
Okay. Okay. I was wondering if you, because you said you like regular Cheerios, so then I was wondering, do you only eat cheese pizza? Because we have heard that before.
No, I do like plain cheese pizza, but I much prefer having like pepperoni and olives and sausage. And
okay, yeah. Okay, Graham, let's do a couple more and then get to the quiz. Okay, here's one from Rhiannon, which I like. How do you decide on good and creative names that fit your books?
For character names, I try to look at, since I write historicals, like what kind of names were common in the time and place that I'm writing about. And so since both of my books have been in 1910s Michigan, there were a lot of very cool and unusual names at that time in Michigan. And so I had a lot of fun with that in both of my books. I love going through like old census records, and I look at, you know, different names that were right for the time period. And so that's a fun way to come up with character names.
Do you have like a whole list of, you know, names that you want to use in the future that you haven't gotten to yet?
Yeah, I have quite a few names that I really want to use, but just haven't found the right project yet.
Yeah. I'm guessing right. You won't share any of them on the podcast, right?
Well, they probably have to stay a secret.
Okay, fair enough. Okay, Graham, go ahead.
All right, this one is from Maddie. She is wondering, is Ruby your favorite gemstone? And if you could have a necklace with any gem, would you choose a Ruby one?
Oh, yeah. I guess I haven't thought about that that much before. I do like rubies a lot. And that's why there's a ruby necklace in Lucy Landry. Yeah, I think it would be amazing to have a ruby necklace. Yeah, I like probably pearl necklaces. I like those. That would be really cool.
I've never thought about this question for even 2 minutes in my life. Not even 2 seconds, probably. Graham, have you thought about what kind of gem you most like?
I have. Oh, yeah, I have. I'm partial to opal. Opal is like, it's got like, what is it called? It has like ancient water trapped in it that give it like those really vibrant different hues. And I find that absolutely fascinating. And I love that the answer was pearl, because that is like, that comes from the sea, which is very on point here with this question. So yeah, I really like that. We have another question that comes from The Luminous Life, and this is from Francine. She says she wants to know more about Meadowlark the Bear. She says, could maybe there be a sequel to The Luminous Life where Meadowlark is a boat captain?
He's a boat captain?
Yeah.
Hunting for pearls?
Well, yeah, I mean, I really liked writing about Lucy's bear. And really, there could have been more with him, I think. Yeah, that's actually quite a good idea.
It sounds, yeah, I mean, he'd have to get some magic to him to alive him. But or maybe he already has it. He's got the internal magic.
I feel like there's a whole series of adventures ready to go, like Master and Commander style with this bear.
Yes.
Here's from Stephanie. Which character from a children's book do you think you are most like? And I take it that Stephanie is kind of saying any children's book, not just characters that you have written.
Okay.
Like, all the books that you read, what character would you think that you are the most like?
Yeah, that is a hard question. There are two books in a series by Jean Little, and they're from the 70s. It's called From Anna, and the sequel is Listen for the Singing. And I really identified with the character of Anna, you know, not only just because we have the same name, although that was part of it. But she was also the youngest of five siblings, and she had, you know, brown hair, and she was, she loved books, and she was kind of shy growing up. And so I really identified with her a lot. And it was fun to, you know, find a character with kind of some similarities. So yeah, I would say her.
Okay. So here's a similar question. We've asked this a bunch. This is from Audrey. It's kind of related in some ways. If you could book wander into any classic book, so just Tom Sawyer, Huckleberry Finn, or The Secret Garden, what classic would you choose and why?
Okay. That's tough, but I think I would go into the Betsy Tacy series by Maude Hard Lovelace.
That's good. Another question we've never had answered, you know, in that
I
way.
Love those books, and the world is just so, so sweet, and you know, it's just, it's a great setting, turn of the century Minnesota. I think it would be great fun to go there.
You know, sometimes every now and then someone answers something like they want to go into some fantasy world, you know, like the Lord of the Rings or something. But I feel like your answer is like Yeah, I think we're overrating our ability to be comfortable.
Yeah, in like, I don't want to go anywhere. Anywhere is remotely scary.
Well, all right, Graham.
Yeah, you know, Minnesota in the winter can be kind of scary.
That's true.
Well, but a lot of fun.
I'm from Wisconsin, so I'm kind of used to that.
Yeah. Right. You know, my family's from Wisconsin too. So,
oh, cool.
And Graham's from Canada, so we get the winter in the north. Where in Wisconsin do you live?
Northern.
Okay.
Lots of snow.
Yeah. Is it still, so speaking of winter, is it still winter there right now?
Yeah, it just snowed a lot.
Okay. So you're just sitting in the house watching the snowfall eating ice cream.
Yeah, basically.
Okay, Graham, let's do, yeah, right. Well, that goes without saying.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Okay. Graham, let's kick it over to that quiz. What do you got for Honor Rose?
Today's quiz. So Honor Rose, we sometimes David has the quiz, sometimes I have the quiz. Today I crafted a quiz for you, and we like to do it based on something we know about you or one of your books. And for yours, it immediately jumped out at me that we need to do a lighthouse quiz for obvious reasons. And so all of these questions have multiple choice answers. So don't get too scared. And most of them are nonsense. So that also helps.
Okay.
She lives in Wisconsin in the winter. How scared can she get?
That's very true. All right. Are you ready?
Yes.
All right. This is question number one. All right. So for this first question, we're going to go back a few years. All right. Maybe more than just a few years. Let's go back to the first lighthouse ever recorded, which is the Pharos of Alexandria. And so this wonder of the ancient world was constructed around 280 BC and stood a whopping 350 feet tall, making it the second tallest man-made structure in the world up to that point, only being bested by the Great Pyramids of Giza. All right, so I'm going to give you some other facts about the Lighthouse of Alexandria. And can you spot which one of these is not true? All right. A, sandstone, limestone, and granite were the three materials used in its construction. B, it was so famous that the Alexandrians put the image on coins, and the current flag of the city features the lighthouse. C, it survived several earthquakes over 1,500 years, but was finally ruined by one in the 1300s. Or D, it survived several earthquakes over 1,500 years, but was finally ruined when one of the keepers had an enormous sneeze.
So she has to figure out which one of these is not true, you're saying.
Correct.
Which one of those is not true? Okay, well, I guess I would have to go with the sneeze.
I probably would go with the same one.
You think so? Yeah,
if this quiz was for me.
If you had to pick one.
Yeah.
Yeah, all right, fine. You got that one right. But let's
leave us hanging there for a second. All right, one for one, Honor Rose. Good job.
Question number two. This is about lighthouse keepers or light keepers. It is common knowledge that lighthouse keeping can be a strenuous job with a lot of responsibility attached. Light keepers have to be fastidious in keeping the light operational, which is a big job in itself, not to mention assisting in search and rescue duties. Many lighthouses employed a pair of keepers so that all that responsibility did not just fall to one person. So here's the question. Honor Rose, if you had to run a lighthouse for a year and could choose one of these fictional characters as your partner to live and work with, who are you going to choose and why? Option A, Stuart Little from Stuart Little. B, George from Curious George. C, Mrs. Beaver from Chronicles of Narnia. Or D, Charlotte from Charlotte's Web.
Well, that's hard. I feel like
not a fair question.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I feel like George would be very fun to have around a lighthouse, but probably not. It would probably cause a little trouble.
Yeah, I feel like there's a shipwreck in the offing. Yeah. George is in there.
So,
but he'll learn a lesson.
Yes, of course. I would have to choose Charlotte. I think she would be a good choice.
Good conversation.
I like that answer.
Wisdom to pass the time.
I think it's a bold answer. Yeah, she could leave you messages about things she's observing, like mirror cracked, something like that. All right, David, what do you think? You think that's a correct answer?
I think that's a great answer. I think it's a great answer. Two for two.
All right, question number three. This is a real question. All right. Saudi Arabia's Jeddah Port Lighthouse on the Red Sea is currently the tallest lighthouse in the world. The concrete and steel structure doesn't exactly look like a traditional, beautiful lighthouse. To me, it actually looks more like a giant microphone with a light on top of it. But this lighthouse beats out the second tallest lighthouse by a whopping 100 feet. So the question is, how tall is the Jeddah Port Lighthouse? A, 43 feet. B, 430 feet. C, 4,300 feet. Or D, 4.3 million feet.
Wow. Well, that is hard to say.
I agree.
Because, I am not familiar with that. What was the second one?
430 feet. So about 43 stories.
Yeah, I really don't know.
I think your gut is telling you, I think it's leading you in the right direction on this one.
All right, we'll go with that.
Option B, 430 feet, the only kind of real hard question in this quiz, and you got it right. So great
work
there.
I thought you were like going to lead her into the wrong answer just to be mean. Just kidding.
Oh, that'd be terrible. All right.
Three for three.
Question number four. Lighthouse name. Okay, so it is easy to sleuth out why lighthouses are called lighthouses. All right, so the compound word basically explains itself. Some find the word lighthouse to be brilliantly simple, and others might find it to be just lazy. But Anna Rose, if you were to acquiesce to the lazy tribe and rename lighthouses with one of the following words, which one are you choosing? Option A, bright beacons. Option B, port pillars. Option C, ships ahoy. Or option D, bungalow. That's like bungalow and glow. It doesn't really work, but it is option D.
Those are very good options. I think any of them could work, but I would probably lean toward ships ahoy.
Okay, that was exactly what I was going to say. Yeah, that's the correct answer, Graham. I don't care what you say.
All right, marking it down. Ships ahoy. Got it.
4 for 4 is the way I'm scoring that one, Graham.
All right, final question. Through the ages, lighthouses have saved tens of thousands of ships from meeting rocky, watery ends, making them one of the most important inventions in exploration and transportation. And this got me thinking, if lighthouses are this effective, what would happen if we created miniature lighthouses to put in other places to help us through some minor inconveniences in our day-to-day lives? So, Anna Rose, if you could choose one of these mini lighthouse placements, which are you going with? Option A, a mini lighthouse to put at the corner of your bed frame, warning you against hitting your shins. Option B, a mini lighthouse on your key ring so the beacon can always alert you as to where you place them.
Oh, option, that's me. I'll choose that one.
Option C, a small car-mounted lighthouse that turns on when someone in another car starts tailing you too closely. Or option D, a lighthouse hat that your neighbor Carl can wear so you'll always know in advance when he's coming over to chat about his cat's rheumatism when all you're trying to do is weed your garden and you don't have time for Carl's Thursday rheumatism cat chat, even though you like Carl, but it's always at the wrong time and you know it would be helpful to have a beacon letting you know that he's coming because like Carl's cat, Carl can be very quiet on approach.
Wow, I can see it being handy for that last one.
Yeah.
I'm letting you into my day-to-day life here a little bit, I have to say.
Well, I guess I would probably choose A. I can see it being handy so you don't bump into your bed. I think that one.
The bed frame shin like surprise is one of the worst things in life. So I agree with this answer. I like it.
But Greg, is it worse than Carl's rheumatism chats?
No, but I'm doing that one anyway. So yeah, let's do both.
Okay. All right. I'm just wondering, like, for you, it seems like the rheumatism rants are very specific to experience in your life. So if you're not really if you're not experiencing that, you may not really be able to understand it. But it did feel like you needed to get that out into the universe.
Yeah.
So I'm glad you had that opportunity to express the
I do feel better. And I also feel good that Anna Rose got 5 out of 5.
That's right.
A perfect score. However, we do need
good
to
job.
Send this into our superiors so they can double check and they'll get you a certificate and what was it? 7 to 9 weeks?
6 to 8 years.
Okay. Six to eight years.
That's not bad.
Right. No. I mean, we can't really guarantee anything about the results of the certificates because we've had some bad experiences. I'll just put it that way. But at least you know within yourself and all the people who listen to this podcast know that you got 5 for 5. And what does a certificate really mean anyway? You know what? It's time for a word of the week. Graham, and
yeah.
Arnold, I don't know if you know this, but we have a bookstore troll. We got a word of the week printer. They're friends, conspirators. It's a whole thing. It's a whole problem. Graham, did the word of the week printer produce a word for us this week? You were going to be communicating. Okay, they did? Okay. All right.
Yeah,
well, what
so
do we got?
He's been printing out objects with the word like hidden inside them. So, but this week he printed out, it's just like an apple, but it looks actually like strangely real and delicious. And I am hungry. So I know you want apple.
No, Graham, it's not a real apple. It's not real. It's printed. It's just paper. I know you like to eat paper, but you can just eat a real apple after we're done with this conversation, because we do need the word. So
okay, fine. I'll smash it.
No, don't do it. I see you're getting. Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Here's
all
the
right.
Word.
So here it is. Oh. Okay. All right. This is an interesting word. This is a very interesting word, actually. This is a word. This is a word you guys use all the time. This is a word that everybody uses all the time. Well, maybe not everybody, but a lot of people. In fact, you'd have to be weird to not use this word all the time, or at least regularly. The word of the week via that delicious looking apple that wasn't an apple is weird. It's the word weird. W-E-I-R-D. So I'm guessing you guys know what this word means. The goal here is you have to figure out what it means and then figure out where it comes from. Do you know what this word means? Graham, do you think you can come up with the answer to this one?
I mean, it means strange, odd. What? I mean, but where does it...
Do you have another synonym to go with strange and odd?
Yeah, different.
Different works, bizarre, crazy, mm-hmm. erratic, yep. eccentric. Throw out some more. This is just like it's a synonym game. Offbeat, kooky. Anyway, you get the point. Okay, so where does this word come from? Do you guys know? Can you? I'm gonna let you guys just talk through this for a minute, and then I'll tell you how close you got.
Yeah, I would not know on this one because it's so short. And usually you can find like where words came from if they're longer, you know, and they have like certain, you know, prefixes or, you know, things like that. But yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a stumper.
This, yeah, exactly. Like, it doesn't scream Latin to me. It does not shout Greek or even like French. I think it's an English word, and I'm probably very wrong. that's where I'm going.
It is English in the sense that it is from the old English word weird or wired or word, W-Y-R-D. So here's the question, though. What do you think that word, which is spelled W-I-R-D and looks a lot like the word word, what do you think that word means? Because it doesn't just mean strange. That's the fun part about the word weird. That's the weird part about the word weird, is that it weirdly doesn't mean strange originally.
Okay. Okay, so in its original spelling with its different meaning, is it some kind of nature word? Like,
no, not really. Okay, here's what I'll tell you. By the time it got to mean what we think of it as it means now, it was adapted from the way Shakespeare used it. And Shakespeare attached it to, you know, the weird sisters in the play Macbeth. So he turned the meaning into strange, or at least it came from Shakespeare's use.
Okay.
Before that, it meant something else that Shakespeare was adapting to the sisters. So those sisters were technically the three witches in Macbeth.
Mm-hmm.
And they were, you know, double toil and trouble and all that. They had their cauldron and they were chanting and all that. So if you know that, does that give you any clues on what W-Y-R-D meant at the time?
So the only thing, when you say like W-Y-R, I think of the old word for dragon, which was worm. So does that have anything to do with that?
Not really. I mean, I'm sure I could think of something.
Okay, so does that have something to do with like what they're cooking? Is it a stew?
It has more to do with the fact that a witch might cast a spell.
So it's something magical.
Yeah, kind of. Or it might, that magic could alter something in your what?
Fate, in your fate.
Yes, in your fate. So originally, it came from the 8th century word, weird word, W-Y-R-D or W-Y-R-D-E, which began to be replaced in texts for the word archai in Latin, which was the Latin name for the fates. So weird had to do with fate or your future. But it just so happens that I actually recently discovered or was reading a book that referenced this, who said that he believes that the word actually probably had more to do with the idea of providence. But then over time, it began to start meaning just fates in general and replaced that. And then Shakespeare took it and attached it to these characters who were witches. And then that became weird. And everyone was like, well, those characters are strange. So, hey, there's a word. Let's use the word weird for strange. So that's how we now use the word weird all the time.
Very interesting.
When originally it meant something to do with providence, like, you know, divine providence, which then became, fates more generally, which then became really attached to witches, which then became strange, which now we use to mean eccentric or odd or any number of other synonyms that you would want to use, such as, that's a weird podcast Honoros was just on. we got a couple more questions for you. It's the same ones we ask everybody here at the end. Thank you for bearing the slings and arrows of a Graham quiz for trying to figure out what the word weird comes from. But what we want to know is, do you have any advice for kids who are listening to this podcast who want to do what you do, who want to be storytellers and writers?
Yeah. Yes, I would say that probably one of my biggest pieces of advice for young writers is not only just to practice writing a lot and read a lot, but also to be open to feedback from other writers and readers. Being open to critique, I think is such a super important thing for any writer, but yes, especially for young writers just starting out. I think that's one of the most important things that you can do is to be open to that.
Mm. That's a great answer. I don't know if we've heard that one too often.
Yeah, it makes sense to me. it's also seems to be a probably a hard thing to do, especially if you've never shown your stuff to anybody else.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
I imagine like that first kind of hurdle of putting yourself out there can be quite scary. So that's a great answer. All right, last question. And if you are not at liberty to talk about it, you don't have to. You can tell us no. But we are wondering, are you working on anything right now that you can tell us about?
Yes. I can't really talk much about it, but I am working on a couple more books. I have a couple of projects in the works in varying stages, and I'm excited. Actually, what I'm working on right now is going to be set in Wisconsin instead of Michigan, so I'm having fun with that.
But are there any bear sea captains that are coming in store? Like, is there anything like that you could tell us about?
Well, there could be something along those lines in the future. I always liked, when I was younger, I always really liked like doll stories, like stories from the perspective of dolls. So I think that doing a story from the perspective of Lucy's bear would be very cool.
That sounds great. We are very excited for whatever comes next. And obviously there are a lot of kids listening who feel the same way. So, and your book, you know, we have a bookstore here in North Carolina and your books do sell well. So we put them out on display and they get snapped up. So I know there's plenty of kids out there who are excited to hear what's next from Honor Rose Johnson.
So. Oh, that is so cool.
Thank you for coming on. Yeah, of course. Thank you for coming on the podcast.
Well, thank you so much for having me. This was so much fun.
Good luck with the new book.
Thank you.
All right, well, that was our conversation with Anna Rose Johnson. Thank you so much to Anna Rose for coming on. Please check out her books if they seem like they would be up your alley. It is time for that old riddle time, ye old riddle time, Graham. How did the kids do answering last week's riddle?
They did very well. Last week's riddle was an oldie, but a goodie. that was sent in by Caleb.
Thanks, Caleb.
The riddle was... David's dad has three sons. Snap, crackle, and... What was the third son's name? Let's let Caleb tell us that name.
The answer is David.
Of course.
Not Pop?
Of course.
Well done, Caleb. Did the kids get it right? A lot of kids send in the right answer?
I think they did. Okay. Yes, I think they did.
Well, we have another riddle. Graham's about to share it with you. If you think you know the answer to this riddle, please email us at podcast@goldberrybooks.com and you will be entered, assuming you get it right, into the drawing at the end of the season to win some books. Graham, what is this week's riddle?
All right. This is a good riddle. I like this one.
Okay.
Okay, David.
Okay.
Picture this scene.
Okay, I'm picturing.
There's a man. His name is Walter. Walter Chardley. And he is doing...
I can already see him just by his name.
Yeah, Walter Chardley is doing a cross-country just road trip. He's going across the country.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
He enters Oklahoma. Why? Because that's where he is.
Across the border? I don't...
Yeah. Okay. But he needs to stop. And he doesn't need to stop for gas. He doesn't need, you know, he's not looking for a bathroom break. He's in desperate need.
So is he in a car?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, he's so in a car. He's driving across.
Yep. He's in desperate need of a haircut. He can't wait another minute. He has to stop his car. He has to get a haircut. So he gets off at exit 2.
He's in Oklahoma.
He's just coming to Oklahoma.
Entered Oklahoma? Yep. Okay.
And he finds this little tiny town. It's kind of like a one horse town.
Like there's not very many buildings, or it's actually like tiny. Like the
there's really just small. Not very many people or buildings.
Okay.
All in right. fact, in this town, there are only two barbers.
Okay.
They're across town from each other. So.
So they're like three buildings from each other.
Right.
There's more barbers than people.
So he parks his car at the first barber shop.
They must have been really happy he was in town. So he's gotten out of his car. He's closed the door. He walks up the steps. Okay.
Looks inside the window. No customers in this barbershop.
Okay.
And the place is kind of a mess.
Okay.
Even the barber, who's the only one in there, looks kind of messy.
Okay.
He's unshaven. His shirt is all wrinkly. The place looks terrible.
Now, Graham, you know we did story time already.
But... And even his haircut is bad. Okay.
So the barber's got a bad haircut.
He's got a bad haircut.
Not a great sign.
So then he remembers that there's another barber shop the other side of town, which is three stores away. So he just walks over there and looks in the window, and it looks terrific.
Okay.
It's nice and neat and clean. Everything is shiny. Barber looks good. He's well-groomed.
He's got his good haircut, okay.
He's got a great haircut, yep. And he has one of those white jackets.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
His
yeah.
comb and scissors are in the pockets there. And
yeah, looks great.
Everything's just
classy.
Looking awesome.
Yep.
So there's barbershop one.
Okay.
Barbershop two.
Okay.
So he has to decide which barber to go to.
Okay.
So your question is... Which one does he decide to go to, and why?
Oh, okay. All right. I like this one. If you think you know the answer, email us at podcast@coldraybooks.com. Solve the mystery of the stranded, long-haired man.
Walter.
Walter, what is it?
Chardsley.
Chardsley?
Yeah.
I don't know if that was it.
Close enough.
Okay. All right. Well, Graham, you know... As every riddle does, that brings us to the end of another episode of Withy Windle. It's a shame, it's a sad time, but it has to happen sometime. What did you think of this episode?
I thought it was great. I learned so much about lighthouses from that quiz that I put together. Actually, I learned less about lighthouses than I did when I started, actually. I know less now.
You know, we do know that about Anna Rose Johnson being a journalist, about gymnasts, a gymnast journalist, so that's pretty cool.
A gymnalist.
We need a real name for this. A gymnurnalist. All right, we'll workshop that one. But thanks to Anna Rose for coming on. Thanks to all of you for participating, for your feedback, for leaving reviews, for sending in riddle answers and names for the word of the week printer, and helping us with the story and all the things that you do and the ways that you participate. We are super grateful for you and thankful to have such a great audience. Thanks also to Logan Green, our editor, for managing the nonsense and making it just the right amount of nonsense. Thanks, Logan. With that, for Graham Pittman, I'm David Kern. Thanks so much for listening. Until next time, happy reading.
Goodbye.